Faces of Success Radio, your girl Miss Diamond. You've now tuned in to Miss Diamond on Interviews with the Stars. Yo, you just tuned in to your girl, Miss Diamond. Hey, young world, it's your girl, Miss Diamond. Interviews with the Stars. You've now tuned in. Let's go. You've now tuned in to Miss Diamond on Interviews with the Stars. Yo, you just tuned in to your girl, Miss Diamond. Hey, young world. It's your girl, Miss Diamond. Interviews with the Stars. You've now tuned in. Let's go.
What's up, what's up, what's up, everybody? Welcome to another hot edition of Interviews with the Stars. I just want to thank you all for tuning in to the show today. And I want to say what's up to everybody who tunes in right here each and every Thursday to Interviews with the Stars with your girl. And today I have a very special guest coming up later on this hour. I have actress, singer, Charlotte Crossley. She's definitely an interview you won't want to miss. So make sure you stay tuned right here on Interviews with the Stars for that. And if you want to hit me up on Facebook, of course, you can do that by typing in Miss Diamond Hot Topics. It's so easy. You know what? And while you're there on the internet, you chilling and you surfing, make sure you stop by and you follow me on Twitter and follow me on Instagram, because you know what? I follow back. I love to interact with my fans, and I love to interact with everyone. So make sure you hit me up, Miss Diamond Hot Topics. It's so easy to find me. Well, today's show is dedicated to the loving memory of September 11th, okay? So many people who were affected by that day. And I can honestly say that I remember that day as if it was yesterday. There were so many lives that was lost. There were so many lives that was changed. You know, so many people didn't know that that was the last day that they would see their loved ones. They would see their coworkers, that kiss their children. So today, I want to say that this show is dedicated to the loving memory of anyone who is going through anything beyond the whole 9/11 tragedy that our country suffered. You know, it wasn't just yesterday. It was actually 13 years ago, okay? So my heart and my prayers goes out to those families, of those loved ones. You know, even if it was you and you were there and you're still affected by it, well, guess what? I'm here to dedicate this show to you, okay? So sit back, relax. I hope I can bring your spirits up. I hope I can bring a smile to your face. And I hope you're ready for this interview that's coming up next hour with Charlotte Crossley. You know, I bring y'all the best. Y'all always have the best. So if you got a song you want to request, you can also do that as well. So hit me up, 323-642-1569. I'm your girl, Miss Diamond. And you have now checked into Interviews with the Stars.
I need you. can you help me? Remember to pray for me.
Continue to pray for me.
Cause I might be going through.
That I might go in peace.
And I might not know what to do.
Continue to keep me lifted.
For the effectual fervent prayer.
That I might go
in
spirit. Keep my faith.
Keep my faith. Thank you. My own. Every day my heart beats with the pain. drunk off that liquor. I can't trust these hoes. But you look so different, girl. You got your girls, I got my nerves. So you should tell your girls to come from with us. Come live in the fast lane. Bottles every night, whatever you like. Cause I do things. And you know my nigga can keep that thing on the side. Cause I just wanna act strange. But this ain't about me, girl, it's all about you. And I ain't just running game. I ain't running game.
It's 2 a.m. I want it, girl. I hop on this, girl. I know you're
whip, full speed to my after hours, take a couple more sips, girl, you know I'll be good for hours, you say it's real and I can feel on it, you know the deal, we in the moment, come live in the fast lane, bottles every night, whatever you like, cause I do things, and you know my nigga keep that thing on the side, cause I just wanna act strange. But this ain't about me, girl, it's all about you. And I ain't just running games. I ain't running games.
Yeah, it's 2 a.m. I want it, girl.
Oh,
I want it, girl. I know you're
I'm
Welcome back, everybody. We are live to the best part of the show, the part of the show that I always look forward to, and that is the part where we have our special guests each and every Thursday on this segment of Interviews with the Stars. So today I would like to welcome to the studio none other than actress, singer, Charlotte Crossley. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you, and welcome to you. I really appreciate this. I've been looking forward to this for weeks, and I'm so excited to be a part of this success, Faces of Success Radio and Blog Talk Radio, and I want to say hi to all my friends. Shout out to all my peeps from coast to coast. Amen.
I know that's right. Well, we definitely want to, you know, thank you for, you know, being today's special guest. You know, we look forward to your interview as well. And, you know, I've told all the fans who have reached out to us, you know, we're going to definitely have a good time this time, okay?
All right, I'm ready. I'm I'm here in my bedroom in Southern California. It's a little too hot for me, so I'm laying under my fan like the young woman that I am, raised by women from the South. I'm just up underneath the fan. I know people appreciate that.
I know that's right. I know that's right. So, you know, let's talk about, first of all, you know, this show today has been dedicated to, you know, the love and memory and the families and friends of anyone who was affected by 9/11.
Yes.
Okay. So I definitely, on behalf of Faith of Success Radio, want to say that, you know, this show is definitely, you know, we send our hearts and our prayers out for those families. And
oh, yes.
I can remember that day as if it was yesterday. You
Me
know,
too.
Can you tell us what it was like for you working in the industry at that time?
Well, actually, that was 13 years ago.
Yes, it was.
My son was 8 years old. He was starting a new school. He was starting a new Christian private school. And I had a friend living here with us. My husband was at work. I got up to get ready for school. And as my custom was to turn on the TV. And I turned on the TV, and I saw that one of the towers had been hit, and so I got on the phone and I called my very dear friend from high school and said, do you guys know what's happening? And they didn't even know.
Mm.
I mean, this was,
wow.
They didn't even know what was going on. And they were,
wow.
And one of them is a musician, and he worked at the Twin Towers. He knew all the caterers. He did a lot of club dates and performances,
mm-hmm.
at Windows of the World, and there was a couple of other places, restaurants in those towers, and he didn't even know. And so we watched it play out on TV, and he just said, "Oh my God, so many people that I work with are gone." And that was,
wow.
It was just uncanny. And I took my son to school, and it was the first day of school, and the first day of school at this new new school for him, which was West Angeles Christian Academy. And the police, the LAPD were on tactical alert. It was crazy. Now, my husband was driving a taxi at that time, and there was no
mm-hmm.
taxis to the airport. Suddenly, it was all cut off.
Hey, wow.
And it was crazy. And the days following, there were no planes that flew in and out of LAX or Burbank or Long Beach. It was crazy. There were no – it was just so – it's like everything changed. Nothing was ever the same. Everything was changed.
Right.
Just the way – just everything. And that was 13 years ago. And New York City changed.
Yeah.
New York City pulled together, and that's something that I love about being in New York. And I was doing commercials back then, but I was basically a stay-at-home mom. But I was doing commercials, I was doing some sessions, but I was taking care of my family and being at home. But this was, and the thing that's interesting is that 3 years later, I returned to the Broadway stage and went back
okay.
to New York, and started rehearsing for Hairspray in 2003, and I had been absent from the Broadway stage for 30 years. So there's a whole lot that went on, but it was a blessing to be able to go back. That was an assignment from God. That was an incredible blessing for me as a performer, as an actress, as a showbiz veteran, and I forged some new chops. It's just all of the years of training and all of the things that I had done were built up to this new reentry into the business. And I'm so grateful for that. That was 3 years on the road, and then I closed out Broadway in 2009, and that was an incredible. It was just a gift from God. I'm just so grateful for that because I grew as an artist, and I was on assignment to help and encourage these young people coming up in the business, you know. I mean, you know, they're – I just saw the Motown review, the Motown musical in New York on Broadway, and those kids work so hard, and it is – you know, that's where you cut your teeth. That's where character is forged. That is where you you become the best in the business, doing a show 8 shows a week. I'm telling you. If you don't know anything about performing or you don't know anything about yourself, you find out, you discover so much about who you are as a person, who you can be, just so many things that you experience doing a Broadway show. And it's not for everybody, for those who pursue and have a heart for that, and they just it's just something that they're just not going to be able to rest until they do it. It's an incredible journey, and it's not for the faint of heart. I tell people all the time.
Oh, wow. So after, after returning to Broadway, you know, after 30 years, what was it like on that first hair show, Frey?
When I went back to Broadway.
What was it like? Yeah.
It was unbelievable. It was heady. I was so excited. I was just so excited. I mean, I was about to pop. And I had to breathe and pray through to be present. And From the downbeat of the overture, you're in it. And, you know, of course, I came on later on in the first act, my first entrance.
Okay.
But from the downbeat of the music, that train takes off from the station, honey, and it's like, we're going to tell this story, so come along, because we're not stopping until act two, you know, until the end of act one, you know. So and to pick up again in act two, but it's like a train that leaves the station and it's leaving on time.
Wonderful.
So it was very exciting, and I just reveled in every single moment. I didn't want to miss anything. I was just so in it and connected to everyone's performance, because we're all a family and we're a team. We're telling a story. And it was a great cast, and we had a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun backstage and a lot of fun on stage. And every moment that led up to our entrances, there was always some other crazy backstory that was going on that kept us all in stitches, you know. And it was incredible to work with Harvey Fierstein and who was the original Edna. And it was just an incredible blessing. We had a blast. It was just, I would do it all over again.
Yes, I've had the opportunity to catch a few Broadway shows, and one thing that I can say about those shows is everyone involved, I mean, as far as who's in it and who's putting it together, everyone is so into it.
Yes.
I mean, it's like you can't take people away from it. It's like you're in a zone. You know,
right.
And you want to give a show, and you give your all. Blood, sweat, and tears is what I always
give. You give your all.
Yeah.
Your all.
Yeah.
You give your all. It's 110% and then some. You know, and it's not just one person who carries it. We all carry it. We all are connected to the process. From the first day of rehearsal, when you start learning the show. You know, I had an opportunity to do Color Purple, but I came into the show. The show was already running, and I auditioned for it. I really wanted to be in the show. I really wanted to do to be a church lady, and I lobbied for it, and I auditioned, and I got in the show. And unfortunately, I had an injury that I had sustained while I was in Hairspray. But you know what? Yeah. Being in the Color Purple, it was no joke, first of all.
Mm.
Those kids, very, very, very intense wardrobe track, wig track, and the church ladies, you know, they're like the Greek chorus. They're commenting on everything that happened. Everything that was happening to Celia is like, who the daddy, oh, heard about poor child Felix. They always had something to say. They would come on and they would do it and get a big laugh and then exit and then go off stage and change clothes and change wigs and come back because it
and
goes
do it
from
all
19. Well, the thing of it is that story starts from 19. Gee, I'd say 19. 08, maybe 1908, maybe 1909 in Georgia, and it goes through, that early part of the 20th century into the 20s, into the 30s, and into the 40s.
Mm.
And it ends, so it's 30 years, and it ends in the 40s when Celie, you know, her sister comes back to her. So this is a whole life story that we're telling and how this woman, you know, who is, you know, a victim of domestic violence from the time she's a young girl. And those are hard stories to tell about black women. It was very difficult. It was heartbreaking. But we earned that happy ending every night. And we would stand on the stage and be in tears. And not only that, mm-hmm. but the anointing of the Lord would come and visit us on stage. The opening scene of that show is we're in church, and the church singer, the church soloist says, it's Sunday morning, and so make a joyful noise unto the Lord. And so, honey, we weren't playing church. We was having church.
I know that's
and,
right.
And the audiences, which were predominantly black, honey, people would go in. It was real. And that is what was the most amazing thing. And I'm telling you, honey, if you didn't know the Lord before you got up in there, you was going to know him and make sure that, you know, your name was written down in the book because it was something that worked to be in a cast that was predominantly saved folk, believing people.
Mm-hmm.
Because you had to bring
yes.
it. And it was real. And I haven't seen anything. You know, there was Sister Act and there was Leap of Faith, other Broadway shows. And they, you know, Sister Act, the movie brought it. The stage play, not so much. Leap of Faith, they tried to do it, and it wasn't there because it wasn't real. You know, you can't play. God says he will not be mocked. And so in the media, in plays, in movies, in the arts, you go for authenticity, and you don't play mm-hmm. with those things. Those things are sacred. It's like people don't play with Shakespeare. They try to mess with Shakespeare. It is a huge uproar because of
the, it ain't happening.
there's a huge uproar when people mess with Shakespeare because this was a man of faith. He was a man of faith. He wrote his prose. He wrote the all those sonnets and wrote all that stuff. It was straight out the Bible because he was a believer. So, you know, that part of my life has been the last 20 years. And I've been in the business 45 years this year, mm-hmm. this month.
Yes.
That part of my life has transcended into every part of my life creatively. It has, I just did a thing. I was in New York last weekend for an event that my dear friend Frank Canino produced for the Suffolk Theater, along with the Suffolk Theater in Riverhead, Long Island, and it was a tribute, a Broadway salute to Stevie Wonder. And honey, that music that Stevie writes is spirit filled. So
mm-hmm.
it was a praise. So much of what we were doing was a praise unto God. We just naturally flowed that way because that's how he wrote the music. And we had an incredible show. It was so fabulous, wonderful audience. They loved it, but you know, 27 songs. And that's not even a thumbnail of Stevie's catalog, you know.
Yeah.
But it was just incredible.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you are connected to when you're connected to God and you have given your gifts back to Him, because He gives you the gift of writing, of singing, of acting, of dancing, of directing, of painting, of you know, all of those fine arts. Those are all designed to be a praise unto Him. And so
mm-hmm.
when we are using those gifts in this high technology age, which He created, which He fashioned for this time, there's an excellence. There's an excellent commitment to the authenticity and to being excellent. And that is something that is caught and not necessarily taught, because you can train people up, and there are a lot of these kids coming up are very, very, very highly trained and very good. But lots of them are very disconnected to what they're doing. They're not connected to it spiritually. And you can see it. And you can see it in their music. You can see it in their performance. You can see, you know, I'll use an example, Lady Gaga. That girl grew up Roman Catholic, very, very strict education, and went to art school, and is an artist, is a true artist. And her, and, you know, when you have true artists in your midst, some people grow up and they're nurtured. Some people don't grow up and they're not nurtured to be an artist, and so they struggle in ways that it's very hard for them when they don't have the encouragement and the nurturing and the love, and the parents recognize, oh, they've got this gift. They really have that. So I need to protect them and love them and help them get the best education and the best opportunities that they can, and to help them, you know, fine tune and be excellent at what they do. This is their heart's desire. And there's so many, particularly in the Black community, there's so many of our kids who, you know, don't get the opportunity because they don't have music in school, they don't have gym class anymore, they don't have art class, the arts appreciation is lacking. But see, all that stuff's coming back now because, because our president has, you know, he's galvanized a bunch of artists and creative people, you know, to help build up the National Endowment for the Humanities and other organizations like that, and to help bring these arts back into school, because it really helps kids all of their other subjects. And it's not just reading, writing, arithmetic, it's all of the other, it's the arts that help kids excel in everything else. And so I was very blessed to have a very intense fine arts education at elementary school, and but you know, a lot of people don't get that, you know, if they they're interested in the fine arts. But it's out there now. It's out there now, and they're, you know, the Boys and Girls Clubs. I mean, you look at somebody like Denzel, who came up, you know, in the Boys and Girls Club. The young lady, Misty Copeland, who's the ballerina, she started the Boys and Girls Club, you know, and this is a girl who was told by the American Ballet Theater, you don't have the right body and you're the wrong color. And now she's a prima ballerina for the American Ballet Theater. And I just, you know, and it's like she started ballet late. So it's never too late. You know what I mean?
Yes,
I know.
Yes.
I'm just rambling on and on and on. Ask
no, you're good.
Child.
You're so you got your start. You were born and raised in South Side of Chicago. And you got your start actually singing, you know, in the choir.
Oh, yes.
At the Metropolitan Community Church. What was that like at 7 years old, starting in a choir? I mean, you're in front of hundreds of people in church, you know, all eyes are on you. You know, you're just, you know, your first opportunity to perform in front of people, but you're just a tender child. What was that like?
Well, you know? At Metropolitan Community Church, which that building now is another, they've transitioned into a non-denominational. It was basically a Methodist church, but it's a non-denominational church right now, and I don't even know what name it has now. But it was a Methodist church when I was growing up there, and they had a big children's department. Could you hold on for 1 second? I'm so sorry.
I'm doing this thing.
Well, I need money. He put the fan up in my room.
I'm doing this thing.
Well, can you give me $3?
I don't have $3. I'm online.
Well, right now we're going to play I Know Where I've Been by Charlotte Crosley. We'll be right back, right here.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm back. I started in...
Yes, and we are back live. If you are just now tuning in, you have tuned in to Interviews with the Stars. Today's special guest is Charlotte Crossley, and that was I Know Where I've Been.
Yes, ma'am. That song is the 11 o'clock number from the Broadway musical Hairspray, the musical. And that song was originally done by the original Motor Mouth for Broadway, Mary Bond Davis, who's a very dear friend of mine. And that song was written by Mark Shaman, composed by Mark Shaman, with Scott Whitman. And that song comes at a point in the show where Motor Mouth tells Tracy that you can't give up, that we've come too far.
Yeah.
And Hairspray is a show about integration and segregation. And
yes,
Motor Mouth has a TV show, and she also has a record shop in North Avenue where every Friday she gives platter parties, and all the black kids and all the white kids come, and they eat soul food, and they dance to all the latest records. And also she throws, you know, platter parties where the artists come, and they perform, and the kids dance, and the black and white kids dance together at her shows, but they don't dance together on the TV show, on the Courtney Collins show. And so Tracy's attitude is, well, why can't we all dance together? And they have a Negro Day on the Courtney Collins show, and that's the show that Motor Mouth, she's the MC on that show. But at the end, she tells Tracy, she says, too many people have died. There's a road we've been traveling, and we've lost so many on the way. Now, this is 1962 Baltimore, which was very segregated. And people who don't know that Maryland is part of the Mason-Dixon line, so that's where the South, the demarcation of for what we call Dixie, or what we call the South, it begins there at that state in the East. And so this is what's going on in 1962 Baltimore, Maryland. And Tracy is a trailblazer, but Motor Mouth tells her, you can't give up, you can't go. I thank God because I know where I've been. He's brought me this far, and he's not going to leave me, so we're going to keep going. And she makes a reference to, she says, there's a dream in the future, there's a struggle we have yet to win. And Dr. King has not made his I Have a Dream speech at this particular point in the show's timeline. And so she's speaking prophetically. She said, there's a dream in the future, and there's a struggle we've yet to win, and use that pride in our hearts to lift us toward tomorrow, for just to give in would be a sin. And so she encourages Tracy to keep going, and the Courtney Collins show does get integrated. The black and the white kids dance together. Tracy becomes Miss Baltimore, Miss Teen Baltimore, and so that's the happy. And she gets the guy, so that's the happy ending.
Yes. So you know, you talk a lot about, you know, the influences and the motivation, you know, that went on in that. You know, who has been the biggest influence on your life, you know, and what have they really taught you?
Well, you know, growing up in the 50s, and television being so new and, you know, it was a brand new thing and it was really, really busting wide open. And, you know, I look back at the black people, the stars that were really that were out there, looking at Lena Horne, looking at Mahalia Jackson, looking at Nat King Cole, and you know, the ones that were on television, you know, and then the, you know, as TV progressed, as you know, you look at some of those old Flip Wilson shows, and he had everybody.
Yeah.
You look at the old Judy Garland show, and she had everybody. She had Lena, and she had, oh my God, she had Ella. I mean, you know, all the black people that were stars, that were, you know, that had concerts and did supper clubs and did nightclubs. Sammy, those are my heroes because they paved the way. And these are people who came out of vaudeville. These are people. I mean, Lena came out of the MGM studio system, which there weren't very many of us that came through that system. Hattie McDaniel.
Okay.
These people were very brave. They were very.
Yeah.
They were excellent at what they did. They did not compromise, and they held their head up. And that was how I was raised. That's what black people did. They held their head up.
Yeah.
They held their head up because it was such blatant and open and overt racism in this country that we had to fight for everything.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing came easy. It all was a battle. I look at Ella Fitzgerald, who I just loved. She had a very, very rough childhood, but it took somebody like Marilyn Monroe to tell the owner of the Macombo nightclub, which is a very fashionable, very, very popular nightclub in the late 40s and 50s in New York. She said, "You're going to let this woman come in here because guess what? I'm going to be in here every night that she's performing.
Mm.
I'm going to be in here, and you're going to get tons of publicity. So you're going to let this girl come up in here."
Mm.
And they did, and they opened the door to Ella, and the door was never closed to her. And then she was in every supper club in New York. But it took Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I look at those are my heroes. Those are my icons. You know, I listen to Ella, I listen to Lena. I go on YouTube and I watch these clips, and I am so encouraged creatively, and I'm just so. It really encourages me, and it really puts me in check about how you're presented. You know, it's about presentation. It's about not just standing up straight and knowing your TV etiquette and looking in the camera, or whatever. But it's about having a positive and upbeat presentation. It's not about buffoonery. It's about presenting yourself in excellence and beauty and poise. And you look at somebody like Nat King Cole, who just sang, oh my God, the man was just cool. He was cool and suave and brilliant. I look at him, you know, I'm encouraged by his artistry, you know, so I'm very old school. So that's the stuff that really influenced me. I listened to all my dad's 78s. I'd go over to my aunt's house and listen to all of her 78s. And when 45s came in, I would just, you know, I just started collecting 45s, honey. I was in my room. I drove my poor daddy crazy because I was playing the same stuff over and over again. And then I would go, I mean, so there was always music, and it was what soothed me. It's what helped me. When I was at my saddest point, music was the thing that saved me.
Yeah,
you know, when the Beatles invaded, when the Beatles came to the United States, that music, along with the Motown sound, that music saved me.
Yeah.
I don't know what would have happened to me, but that music was, I would play that at night in my room, or I would listen to my transistor radio. So the music was everything to me. It gave me a reason to keep on breathing.
Yeah. So, you know, thinking about all of these wonderful influences, you named a lot of, you know, wonderful black women. You know, what would be your advice to any young woman or that little girl or that teenage girl who wants to come up in the industry right now but doesn't know what to do? What could you tell her right now?
Well, you know what? There's somebody that believes in them and that they matter, and that this is something that they really want, that they just can't live without, that to pursue the high road, to pursue, if they sing, learn how to sing properly, and listen to everything, not just the artist of today, and learn how to sing properly, learn how to stand up straight and speak well. It's about poise. It's not about everybody being the same, but it's about having poise and having good manners and seeking the high road. Now, they may want to do hip-hop, whatever it is they want to do, there is an excellence. It's not about being at the bottom of the barrel. It's about going to the top of the heap in their artistry. And my advice to parents and to people who are in educators is to nurture the soul of an artist, and that is to meet them where they are and love them and encourage them
to pursue the art or the craft from an educational point of view, and to stir up their creativity, their ability to be extemporaneous, to be off the cuff, to be instant in season. But my advice to these young people, young girls, is pursue excellence. Take the high
mm-hmm.
road. And
yes.
If they're believing people, to put God first, because he's given them a gift. And that gift has to
yes.
be developed and polished and nurtured and protected. Because we just can't just get out here just willy-nilly and think we're like a piece of spaghetti that we're just going to throw it up to the wall and see if it sticks. You know,
yeah.
You know, there's an attitude about that. We'll say, oh, we don't know. We'll just see if it goes. But this industry is very competitive in ways that it never was, because we've got so much technology. There's just so much instant grits. You got so much instant, you know, you can take someone who can't sing but who's got a great look and craft a sound behind them that they can never duplicate live, because the rubber meets the road is, can this person stand up in front of an audience with no band and still sing and take one song out of their repertoire and sing it with no music and nail every note and be on key? You know,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
That's the juggernaut of it. It's about excellence, and it's about, they have to ask themselves the question: why do they want to be in this business? Some people, this is the only love that they get is from an audience, and that's pretty sad in a way. But then some people just love. You look at somebody like Joan Rivers, who just passed. She loved people. She loved telling jokes. She loved cheering people up. Yes, she was bawdy. Yes, she was racy. But she loved people, and she was a servant
yeah.
to people. She served people. She, you know, when she created all of her clothes and her jewelry and her line of fashions, she talked to her. She was on when she would be on, you know, on QVC and talking about her fashions and talking to the customers to call in. She loved all of them. She respected them. She said, it was nice knowing you. It was nice talking to you. That, you know, those kind of things are so important to a public, because they feel that that this is an artist. This is a person who's tangible. This is a person who really does care. This is a person who really, and you know, who really loves what they do, and they don't take it for granted. They've been given a gift, and here's a wonderful audience. And they love and respect them. They, you know, it's about that. It's about honor. And I've been saying that, and I've been using this. This has been something I've been talking about for weeks now. But being honorable is something that we don't see a lot of in our culture. And it has to be. And those that are being honorable are, you know, people are so amazed. But it's something that is so simple that starts within them, a purpose in your heart to be honorable, to honor God with your gift, to honor each other. You know, they're people that I get to work with. I just love them. I just love them. We have so much fun together. We respect each other. We encourage each other. We hold each other accountable. That's a very, very
yes.
rare thing in our culture. But I think that when you're in a true artist community, those things are very much in play. The honor, the respect, the fun, the jocularity and all that, but not the bitterness and the haterism and the cutthroat. See, those people who are cutthroat, they don't make it. They don't last.
Yeah. Wow.
They have their flash in the pan. You know, and then just to you cannot maintain and continue with the haterism, the hater nation in the artistic community. It just doesn't
yeah.
play out. Ain't nobody gonna buy
yeah.
your record. Ain't nobody gonna buy your painting. Ain't nobody gonna go see your movie. At the end of the thing, there may be a few people who dig that, but on the main, people are gonna go, you know what? They don't have time for that. They're on to the next thing, because people need to be lifted up and need to be encouraged. They don't need to be you get enough being pressed down and squashed and suppressed. there's enough of that going on in the world. So when you're building people up and you're making people feel good and you're making people have hope, you know, it's like okay, I can, this is great. I spent $200 on tickets or $350 on tickets or whatever I pay, but and this person delivered and more, you know. And it's not even about the money at the end of the night. It's about, oh my God, I got to see someone who I love, and I, you know, it's about that. When I get to go see someone that I love, I'm just sitting on the edge of my seat. Oh my God, I'm looking at everything. I'm taking it, but they reach you. You know what
yeah.
I mean? So these young people who want to do this is about this. Do you really want it? And why do you want it? And if when God opens a door for you to walk through that door, are you going to be excellent? Are you going to just be, you're just going to be wild and unbridled and you know, there's so much inclusion now. There's just so much inclusion out there. But whatever it is that God's called you to do in this industry, whatever area it is, if you're digging ditches, if you're laying cable, if you're hanging lights, whatever it is, it's doing it with excellence and being a part of a team, because we're not solitary. We work together.
Yes. You've been a part, you know, this has been a long-term career for you in show business. I mean, from acting to singing, you know, Broadway plays. I mean, and now, to me, motivational speaker. But it's not music or it's not acting. You know, what else would you be doing?
Well, I do write. I write. I'm not as disciplined at it as I have been in the past, but I do write. I have story ideas. There's stories that I want to tell. There's some things that I'm working on. But you know what? I love encouraging people. I received my minister's license a few years ago, and, you know, for no other reason than if somebody asks you, do you have a minister's license, it's like, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, I got it. But, you know, God deposited something in me specifically for people who are in the arts. That's who I minister to. And in order for me to minister to them, I've got to be among them and in it, because he can trust me, because I'm not stargazing, I'm not tripping. I love this business. I really love it. The good, the bad, the hard times, the sad times, and the absolutely extraordinary times. I've been blessed to meet some incredible people and learn so much from working with them. I'm so blessed and grateful to have spent time with Robin Williams, working with him and seeing his artistry and talking to him about personal things and just, you know, having those moments, working with Whoopi Goldberg, working with Bette Midler, working with, you know, these incredible people who have a gift and love what they do. My family wanted me to go to university and become a teacher, become a nurse, and I didn't have it to be a nurse, but God definitely gave me an anointing for healing through my voice, and that's something that I don't take lightly. So healing arts come in so many different ways. It's not just medicine, or it's not just those disciplines, but there's healing in music. There's healing in art.
Yes,
there's
it is.
Healing in poetry, in the written word and the spoken word. There's healing there, because the words are powerful, and images and music, those things are powerful, and God uses all of those things to bring comfort and to bring respite to troubled souls and troubled minds. So I love being around people in the industry. I love ministering to those who really have a heart. And some people are very, very broken and wounded by things that have happened to them in this business. But, honey, if there's one thing you have to have, you got to be tough. You got to just go, you know what, this is not going to drag me down, and this is not the end. This is just a moment. This is a season, and this season passes. And so I'm going to get up, and I'm going to be strong, and I'm going to keep on standing. You know, I left New York in 1979. I had a record deal. I was with Sharon Redd, who passed away, and Ula Hedwig, who's still with us, and we were Harlettes for Bette Midler, and we got had our own record deal on Columbia. And when we got dropped from the label, that's a pretty low place to be. And I didn't feel like I could have stayed in New York. I came to California, and so I could try to get myself together, to get my head together,
okay.
to get my health together, just to get myself together, to clear my head and to get another perspective. And it was good that I came to California because I got another record deal. I knew I would, you know, but it was there were a lot of unanswered questions. I didn't get any answers to those questions until I came out here. And it was also timing because I was young and I was in my 20s. And I didn't really have anybody to explain stuff to me until a friend of mine who had been an executive at Columbia took me out to lunch and explained everything to me that happened. And I was like, oh,
wow.
Okay. And then I was able
wow.
to, but you know, I really realized it didn't have anything to do with me or my talent or
yeah.
the three of us girls, because we, or our talent or the project that we did, we got lost in the corporate shuffle. And that happens.
Yeah.
You know, people get dropped. And then you have to figure out what you're going to do. And
yes.
so it was rough, you know. Some people went, you know, Ula was able to go back and perform with Bette as a harlot. I chose not to, but I was able to work with her on other projects and be in the studio. And it was an incredible thing because my friend Mark Shaman, who wrote the music for Hairspray, he moved out to California. And then I began doing a lot of studio work for motion pictures for him because he was a producer. And those were just incredible days, and that's when I started doing a lot of work, a lot of background work with Luther Vandross out here and my friend David Lasley. And just
yes.
there was a community, and my friend Allie Willis, so there was a who wrote the music for, along with Stephen Bray and Brenda Russell for Color Purple. So I started working with all these incredible people and learning, and just it was just incredible. I mean, when I started doing backgrounds with Luther, that was the background juggernaut for me. Working with
okay.
him, learning from him, just how this man crafted vocals and how he set the tone and just the excellence that he exhibited. And we had so much fun. And I go back and I listen to those records, and they are just exquisite. I mean, just...
Yes.
I often
hear a lot about...
Yes.
Yes, I hear often a lot about how Luther treated people.
Oh, he was
and
wonderful.
And that was important.
Yes.
That was important to him.
Oh, yeah. You know what? He loved Sissy Houston. He loved the Sweet Inspirations. He loved all the girl groups. And so when he loved Dionne Warwick and Dee Dee Warwick, the sound that they made, the brilliant, and loved Aretha,
yes.
and just the brilliance of the human voice and what these voices did, how their voices printed on wax, how they printed on the tape, how they maintained, and how just... You know, and also to the men who produced those records, you know, Hal David and Burt Bacharach and Arif Mardin and Jerry Wexler, all these producers who got these singers. And Luther
yes.
just loved them. He honored them. He honored them and worked with them, was able to, you know, work on, it is your dream come true to be able to sing with all these singers and then be able to produce. So he was just something, and I'm so grateful to God for having come up under him, you know, and I say come up under him, come up together in the business.
Yes.
It was just heartbreaking when he passed away. I was doing Hairspray on the road. We were in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I was just devastated. I didn't even go to work. I was in my bed in the hotel
yes.
with my husband and my son. I was just devastated. I couldn't process it. And I was listening, they were playing his music on the radio, and I didn't even know how to deal with it. You know, but over time, but it was just, it's like I think about him. When I hear him on the radio, you just stop and you just go into the zone as a singer. You just go right. He just takes you right into that universe, you know, that he operated out of, that he dwelt in, it was just something just incredible. We talk a lot about him in the movie 20 Feet from Stardom. You know, Lisa Fisher. I mean, when I look at all that on the film, I'm just amazed.
So talk to us about Let the Good Times Roll.
Oh, the group Swing. Well, that group was produced by Richard Perry, and it was me, myself, Lorraine Feather, and Steve March Torme. Lorraine Feather has become a very prolific songwriter and singer, and Steve March Torme is his eldest son of the jazz crooner, Mel Torme, the late Mel Torme. And we were put together by Richard Perry. Actually, Kenny Ortega, who was Michael Jackson's director, he was our choreographer and our director, and he whipped us into shape. This was years ago in the 80s, but Richard Perry had a project that he wanted to do, really for his mom, and we did this 40 kind of swing, modern swing music, and we had a lot of fun doing Let the Good Times Roll. That was a song that Helen Humes recorded, and it was just a fun, upbeat, very fun, upbeat song. And I look back on that, I was like 26, 27 years old, and why not sing Let the Good Times Roll, you know? And it was so cute. It was really a lot of fun to do that album. We had a lot of fun with Richard, and it's kind of got a cult album. It's a bit of a cult classic, if you will.
Okay.
But we had a lot of fun doing that.
Well, we're gonna play it real fast.
Okay.
Yes, and then we'll be right back on Interviews with the Stars.
You bet.
Yes, and that's what we're all about right here on Face of Success Radio. If you have just tuned in, I have the wonderful Miss Charlotte in the building today, and that was Let the Good Times Roll. So we're gonna talk a little bit more about that. I mean, how was it when you first started working on that project?
Well, it was right after I'd gotten dropped by Columbia, and so there was an audition. My friend Greg Smith called me and said, "Charlo, come on and audition for this." And so I went in and I sang and they took pictures and Richard Perry, he picked me and Lorraine and Steve and put us together and worked with us. So we had to, you know, we had to work real hard with harmonization, started studying, taking voice lessons with Seth Riggs and one of his associates, and we really had to work hard. We really had to work hard because I had more R&B kind of Broadway chops. So did Lorraine. So we had to bring, you know, we had a lot of different styles. Steve March was singing rock and roll at the time, and now he's singing. He's out touring with some of the members of his dad's band and singing big band music and just singing beautifully. And so we all came from a little bit different disciplines, so we had to come together as a group, and it was beautiful. We had beautiful harmonies, and you know, it was tough. It was hard work, and we were dieting furiously because he wanted us pencil thin. And I was looking at the picture that was posted, one of our publicity posters, and I was looking at that picture, and I was going, "Oh my God!" It's like I was like lunching on a lettuce leaf.
Wow.
I was just eating so sparingly just to keep my weight down, and I must have weighed 160 pounds.
Oh wow!
But I mean, we looked beautiful, but we were just so. It was just grueling. It was really yeah. grueling, but you know, I'm glad
wow.
I came.
I bet it was, you know, just going back and looking back at that, you probably remember all of the experiences that you went through just to get there. But, you know,
and also on a personal note, my personal life was not the greatest. So I just really basically escaped into being in the studio again, you know, being back in the studio and working. I mean, that was what kept me focused, because my personal life was pretty, and it was not in a great place.
Wow. Well, we know that, you know, everyone in life, we go through things. You know, life is not always, you know,
a bed of roses.
At our best. Yes.
Right.
Yes. But, you know, tell us, you know, you've had, like I said, 45 years of just, you know, hardcore entertaining and making people laugh and keeping people encouraged. You know, how has your life been different from what you imagined it to be, you know, as a teenager just going through, you know, drama class or singing somewhere? You know, how has life been different for you?
Well, you know what? I wanted to, first of all, my focus was get out of Chicago. As beautiful, as
okay.
great, as wonderful as that city is, and I'm so grateful for the opportunities that were afforded me, I had to get out of there.
Okay.
I had to get away from my father. I had to get out of there and begin to live the dream that I was having in my head, which basically was right out of a 007 movie. I loved
okay.
going to the movie, so I was just, it's like, if I saw it on TV or I saw it in a motion picture, I saw it and said, like, I want to do that. So it was about not only doing the art or being in movies, I wanted to live the life that I saw on the screen. I wanted to go
yeah.
to those parties. I wanted to go to exotic places. I wanted to go to New York. I wanted to come to California. I wanted to go to Paris. And I did those things. And a lot of that because I was dreaming. I was dreaming these dreams, and I would cut out pictures, and I would just visualize living this life. My mother died when I was 12, and so my world basically was hanging by a thread because I didn't have my mother in the world with me anymore, and it was the worst thing that ever happened to me, and I figured this was the worst thing that could happen to me, so I've got to figure out how am I going to make up for, what am I going to do with my life to make up for this pain that I was feeling. And so I went to the movies, I went to the Motown Review, I would sit there, I would sit through the show like two or three times, I'd sit through once to be entertained, and the next two times it was school. So I was sitting there watching all these groups and going, I want to do that, I'm going to do that. And it was something about when the lights hit them, and it was transformative. I said, I want to do that, and I'm going to do that. And my family, my father's family, they were not behind me. My brother, my sister was secretly, my sister and my stepmother, they really encouraged me, and they secretly encouraged me. But I had some tough things that nobody wanted to. My father wouldn't take me to rehearsal, so I walked to rehearsal. You know, I mean, nothing was going to keep me, nothing was going to break me from wanting to do this. And so it was a very lonely and solitary life in some ways. And I had, you know, when I was in high school, I had friends who I just loved and adored, but I had my theater friends and I had my intellectual revolutionary friends. So, but, you know, it was nice having all these little groups of friends and that I could kind of move through, but I wanted to be in show business and I wanted to travel and I wanted to live. I wanted to have what I saw on the screen. And in some ways, in a lot of ways, I've been able to experience those things, particularly the travel. I wanted to travel. I wanted to just, these were some seeds that my mother had planted in me. And so I was running after those things. And it wasn't about being rich and famous. It was about doing, it wasn't about being rich or famous or being a star. I don't know what that is, and I've watched several people become huge stars. I watched Bette Midler blow up. I watched Barry Manilow explode. I watched people just watching these two people become sensational wasn't a flash in the pan. These are people who had it and who worked hard and who had good management and had, but, you know, it was there was a big distinction between the two, but nevertheless, watching that and so it made me think, and I just was talking about this recently, that what do you want to be a star, and what kind of star do you want to be, and what do you want this business to be for you? Not you know you want to be yes you know you want to be in it, but what do you want it to be for you? That was a very important question. I loved my work. Maybe I wasn't ambitious enough for some people, but I wanted to, I didn't want to check out. And all I can say is that for all of the personal struggles that I had and the unhappiness and some of the very, very painful and just things that I experienced, there were people who were praying for me. And God kept me, and He brought me out. And I loved snorting cocaine. I loved snorting it. It made me feel good. But I realized later on that I was depressed, and so this was something that helped lift my depression. And with so many people who have some kind of borderline clinical depression, they use alcohol or drugs recreationally to feel better. And so when I came to that realization that I had that going on, I wanted my life to change. And that took place in the mid to late 80s. In 1986, I started, I had a personal epiphany begin. And I wanted my life to be different. I wanted to be married. I wanted to have a family. I wanted a life that was not drama-free. At some point, you get tired of the drama. You get tired of having crazy people in your circle.
I know, that's right.
You get tired of people saying to you, well, you ought to be a big star by now. They don't even know what it takes to even do what you do. They're not even, they're clueless. But they want to throw these little barbs and throw these things in your ear and make you feel like you'll never make it. So once I got away from them, and once I got my life on track in the Lord, I got delivered from drugs. I became much more responsible on the job. I wanted my life to be different. And so I knew that the only way that was going to happen was when I got serious about the things of the Lord. And all I can say, God kept me. He brought me through. And he made a promise to me. And I want to tell you, he's a promise keeper. He really is. And some people, make poo-poo that and say, oh, Charlotte, you worked hard. I couldn't have done anything that I've done without him. And so you spend so many years not acknowledging him or thinking you know him, but when you really know him, when you really know that you know that you know, he makes all the difference. And I'm not ashamed. I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Jesus Christ. I'm not ashamed of what he has done for me, what he continues to do. And I'm just grateful. And I encourage people, because everybody's on a journey. And he will bring you to the end of yourself to bring you to him. And that doesn't mean that he's going to take your life, your physical life, from you. But he will. But when you give your life over to him, he makes all the difference. And so in 1986, I started having, it's like 86, 87, 88. 88, 89 were crucial. 89, I got delivered from drugs. And do you know, before that, he started giving me incredible jobs. He started putting me incredible places. And only places that he could do. Nothing that I could create or strive for or manipulate or make happen. He did it because I said yes to him. And I am so grateful. And say yes. I just keep on saying yes every day. Yes, yes, and thank you. My gratitude to him is unbounding. I'm just so grateful for everything that he's done. He's given me a beautiful family. The Bible says, God says, the solitary in families. And he put me in a beautiful family. I mean, beautiful mother-in-law and sister-in-laws. And my husband's family has been so beautiful to me, and I was so grateful because I was very lonely and I was afraid, but when God got a hold of me, he gave me peace, because I didn't have peace. It's something to be able to lay your head down on a pillow and sleep and be in peace and wake up and be in peace, and you don't have crazy people knocking on your door or, you know what I'm saying, people can't get to you. He just put me in the cleft of the rock and hid me. And I met my husband in church. I mean, you know, all of those things that he promised me, he gave me. He did it. He did it because I said yes to him.
Yes.
And I'm very grateful for that.
Yeah, so I want to thank you for being a part of the show today, calling in and being today's special guest on Interviews with the Stars. You know, here at Faces of Success Radio, we talk a lot about, you know, how to motivate others, how to be successful, you know, and just how to stay positive in your life. And, you know, today you have definitely been a positive influence on our listeners, your fans, and myself as well. So I want to thank you on behalf of Interviews with the Stars for being my today's special guest. So tell the fans how they can contact you.
Well, for all of my Facebook peeps, all of my family, they know how to reach me. But everybody else, I'm on Facebook, Charlo Crossley, facebook.com/Charlo, Charlo, Crossley, on Facebook. And please ask me to request that we become friends, or you can send me a private message. I'll be happy to get back to you. I want to give a shout-out to all of my New York family and friends, my friend Frank Canino, who I just worked with, to my friends out here, Jan Alejandro and Kirk, and all of my Facebook family, all of my Chicago family and friends, all the Crossleys, and just all of my singer, actor, Hairspray family. I love you all. I'm nothing without you. And, you know, with God I can do everything, and I'm so grateful for what's been, what's coming, and what's been. I'm determined that the best is yet to be for all of us, and I love you, and I thank you. So thank you so much, my sister, for this wonderful hour. This has been such a blessing, so much fun. And a shout-out to my manager, Sydney Big Dog, and to the wonderful Kristen Wright Matthews, Pookie, a.k.a. Pookie, and if there's anybody else I forgot, God bless you. I thank you so much.
Yes, yes. So there you have it today on Interviews with the Stars today, special guest, Miss Charlotte. You have it right here on Facebook Success Radio. We're going to end with Gardenia Restaurant right here on Interviews with the Stars.